and welcome to another jam-packed edition of The Municipals.
Rising taxes are probably a reality.
I'm a big advocate of change. Not change for change's sake. Change when something isn't working.
I'm sure the NDP wishes that they had a less embarrassing federal partner to work with right now.
Don't vote, can't bitch.
The moment we go to an election is the end of Prime Minister Justin Trudeau.
And welcome to another episode of The Municipals. I'm Matthew.
And I'm Philip.
Wow, Philip, again, we're back again. You know, it's been an interesting week. Lots happened. Before we get into it, because I have a feeling that probably most, if not all, this episode is going to be at the municipal level. I just want to pick your brain a couple things. First, you know, just happened in the last few days. Your thoughts, O.J. Simpson dead at 76.
Well, I mean, we've all got to feel sad about this, right? I mean, completely non-controversial character who's only done good and charitable things with his life. I mean, you know, hearing some people refer to the man as the juice, I mean, that seems hurtful for a man who's, let me quickly check his Wikipedia, you know, so I can figure out maybe what I'm missing. But, I think we all agree that it's a real shock and a sadness to lose such a giant in the world.
Of course. That was your satire opinion.
That was really good. I mean, I thought
you
so,
did
anyways,
it. You did it without breaking laughter.
Yeah, it was just good. Straight up like, yeah, that's anyways. I think death is tragic and sad. I don't think we need to be shedding too many tears for the death of O.J. Simpson.
I only have one question for you, because back in the infancy of me beginning the podcast, I actually did an episode. I believe it was a two-parter, if my memory serves me correctly, on O.J. Simpson. And at the end of the episode, myself and the co-host I had at the time, we both answered whether or not we think he did it. It doesn't matter what we think, but we offered our opinion. So my co-host, I believe he was on the fence.
Interesting.
I felt like he couldn't be anything other than guilty. So the only question I want to know is, where do you fall on that, Phil?
It's all of his actions are just too silly for an innocent man. You know, I'm thinking, like, including up to the police chase. I mean, I'm sorry, that you got to be preemptively freaking out for that to be like your logical, this is what I got to do, just fucking dip.
So, interesting story. There's one thing I want to talk about, and this actually leads perfectly into that. So the whole Bronco car chase. It's interesting that it came on and it was a big news story when it was, because this all happened in the summer of 1994, when we've talked about him before on the show. Vince McMahon, the owner of the WWF at the time, he was getting ready to go on trial for steroids. The federal government, he was indicted by the federal grand jury for steroids. And in New York, every day, I guess leading up to that, whatever, he was basically, what I was told, was front page news or near the front pages. And then this shit with OJ happened, and it completely wiped Vince McMahon off the front page. And the reason I say that is because, you know, we just had WrestleMania, and, you know, we don't really talk about wrestling, but I enjoyed it. It was like 11 hours of wrestling in 3 days. And the only point that I'm going to make is the other wrestling organization, AEW, is run by a billionaire mark named Tony Khan. And he showed his whole ass this week when he... Okay, so there's a wrestler that he fired unjustly, but whatever, that now works for the WWF, that was involved while he worked for Tony Khan, was involved in a backstage fight 7 months ago in London. So he decides this week, after that said wrestler went on, I don't know if you've ever heard of Ariel Helwani.
No.
He's
no.
a podcaster.
I was going to say, is that the name of a person or is that a brand?
Ariel Helwani is a podcaster, and he runs a podcast called The MMA Hour. So he had this wrestler on the podcast, and the wrestler told the story about what it was. The wrestler, I'm not afraid of names. The wrestler I'm referring to is CM Punk. So CM Punk told the truth. And Tony Khan was upset about it and could have shown the footage in the last... because the event I'm speaking about happened in July of last year. And we're in what? We're in April of this year. He could have showed it in any of the months up till now, but decides to show the footage for what? Because exactly what... But exactly what Punk said happened on the footage.
Oh, shit.
So, plus, it's not like there can be a payoff. He can't fight for Tony Khan's organization. He works for a different one. See what I'm saying? There's no payoff. There's no way that Tony Khan's organization can benefit from showing the footage. That's what I mean when I say Tony Khan showed his whole ass. And anyway,
that's fair.
I just wanted to get that out of my system because I've been sitting on that. And yeah, Tony Khan's a billionaire, Mark, and we got better things to talk about.
I only want to say one more thing about O.J. Simpson, and that's to talk about our degraded quality of seeing police chases on the TV, because we just don't see that shit anymore. They're not letting us see the action. They want us to respect the police, but they won't even show us all their most fun takedowns.
They don't make them like they used to.
Exactly.
So before we get started, the only thing that I wanted to touch on, I'm sorry, Philip. I don't think this will offend you, but if it does, I'm sorry in advance. But World Economic Forum guy Klaus Schwab's in the hospital. Apparently he's really sick, Philip.
You have to understand, this doesn't bother or offend me because...
No,
that would be like me saying to a very
you haven't heard the punchline yet, but go on.
Oh, it's a joke.
No, no, he actually is in the hospital.
Oh, okay, all right. Well,
what I was gonna say was, you know, it couldn't happen to a better person.
Like, you know, this would be like taking, I don't know who's a good example of a two online conservative person. But to be like, oh man, that other coach brother is you know on their deathbed. I don't think they'd give a fuck. They're just like, who are you talking about? Like, yeah, that's right, Schwab. We's elite the bugs. Take that.
Okay, so let's get started. Now, we were gonna talk about the expanded list of the Sunshine List, but we may have to kick that to next week because we've got a big issue on our hands that we got to talk about.
Oh, shit.
And we're going to start with it's all intertwined. So I figure this week's probably going to be like a big discussion that's going to span all three sessions. So I want to start with the letter that was sent around on Twitter last week. Signed by six city councilors, and I'm going to read the letter. Anytime you want to say something, just interrupt me. I also want to read the tweets that each councilor wrote, and I understand you have some updated information when it comes to Lily Chang. Is that right?
Yes.
We'll get to that. So I want to start only because when I was researching it, I came across Paula Fletcher's first, so we're going to start there. Paula Fletcher, councillor, city councillor, Ward 14, Toronto Danforth. She posted a letter signed by her and five other councillors, and the letter goes like this. The heading is "Protecting the Right to Protest in Our City." In recent days, hundreds of residents have shared their concerns with our offices regarding their experiences during a march recognizing Land Day. I didn't even know that was a thing. In downtown Toronto on March 30th. We support and thank our colleague, the counselor for Toronto Centre. So I think they're talking about Chris Moyse, for his statement affirming the right to freedom of expression and peaceful assembly. Freedom of assembly is a protected right under the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. In these difficult times of heightened tension in the world and Toronto, these rights must be protected as part of our democratic society. It is deeply concerning to hear residents voicing fears about their freedom to engage in protests, demonstrations, and large gatherings. We reiterate our commitment to upholding the rights and freedoms of all Torontonians. Our city must be a place where all people are free to demonstrate and engage in protests as a form of democratic expression. And this letter was signed by Ward 3 Councillor Amber Morley, Ward 4 Councillor Gord Perks, Ward 9 Councillor Alejandro Bravo, Ward 10 Councillor Osma Malik, Ward 14 Councillor Paula Fletcher, and Ward 18 Councillor Lily Chang. And in her tweet with the letter, Councillor Fletcher writes, "Happy to join my councillor colleagues in a statement that in these times of great tension and division, freedom of assembly must be respected and upheld." Your thoughts?
Sorry, I was just the thing that you told me to do, which was to, you know, get the tweet or the specific, the Lily Chang bit.
Well, I can go on for a little bit if you're want to keep looking.
Listen, you can keep spurring. I'm gonna find this.
Okay, so from Amber Morley, she writes with the letter attached in her tweet. "Today, I share a joint statement with my council colleagues, reaffirming our commitment to uphold the rights and freedoms of all Torontonians, including freedom of assembly. All people in Toronto must feel safe as participants and bystanders to peaceful and lawful demonstrations." And then she goes on, "The Toronto Police Service plays a critical role in ensuring safety at protests and demonstrations. I appreciate the complex situations they navigate to do this work. Knowing this, it is concerning to hear residents voicing fears about their freedom to engage in these events." By the way, if my voice sounds scratchy, I do apologize. But I'm going to persevere. She continues, "As the civilian body that oversees the TPS, the Toronto Police Service Board is the appropriate channel to address these concerns. As a member of the TPS board, I intend to bring forward an item that will create space for this dialogue at the next meeting on April 30th, 2024. She goes on, "I will share more information about how residents can register to speak on this item as soon as the agenda is published. Please find general information here about how to dispute at a TPS board here." And she gives the thing, the link. And one more tweet, she goes, "I appreciate the engagement from hundreds of residents citywide on this topic, and I remain committed to creating and amplifying opportunities for meaningful engagement and dialogue." Are you good, or do you want me to keep going?
Yeah. So I found her statement. I had to go straight to her website because I think the thing that I found that was referencing Lily Chang's reverse statement was a tweet from Greg Brady, the radio host.
Right.
And I've found that he has locked his tweets, I imagine due to the escalation in Israel. So I get that. So I couldn't find it. So I found her statement on her website, which is good for her. Good for you, Lily Chang.
Can you please read it?
I will. Well, first of all, I want to say, to be perfectly honest, I find the letter from the counselors in support. Like, I think I agree with them. And I think they're mostly talking about, like, the protests are referring to the one on March 30th is the one where they arrested some people on what seemed like very obviously trumped up charges. Like one of
Just
them
so the,
being.
just so our audience knows, we are talking about pro-Palestinian marches,
Yeah,
correct?
yeah,
Okay.
yeah, yeah, yeah. Like I think one of them like was arrested for assault with a weapon because they threw the police horse's shit at them. And I've got to tell you, I don't know if I talked about this last week. If this is this is a bit of a me reaping, me sowing, or sorry, me sowing, me reaping when it comes to the Toronto Police having no apparent responsibility to keep their horse shit picked up. And I don't mean that in the allegory way when we say horse shit. I mean the literal horse's shit. So, the fact is, and there's a ton of people who've expressed their disappointment with the Toronto Police when they felt that they haven't done enough to push back on these protests. But now that they're, essentially violating charter rights to make a statement, the councillors are just frankly reminding the police that they have an obligation to uphold the law and not simply the imagery of the law, which I mean, a lot of people would be more than happy if the police just looked like they were supporting the law, but no, they actually have to abide by the law. So
So
I'm supporting.
before you read Lily Chang's, I just wanna because hers I'm not sure what you're gonna say, so I know what I've got here. So let me just go through Osman Malik's and Alejandra Bravo's, and then I'll hand it back to you. So Osman Malik writes in her tweet that's attached to the letter, many residents have reached out to me with serious concerns, which I share, about police conduct on the peaceful Land Day March in Toronto on March 30th. My council colleagues and I reaffirm our commitment to upholding the rights and freedoms of all Torontonians. And then Alejandra Bravo writes in again with a tweet attached to the letter that's circulating. And her tweet reads, freedom of assembly and expressions are protected under Section 2 of the Charter. The CCLA and the OIPRD and legal precedent have confirmed the absolute right to peaceful protest. These rights must be protected as part of our democratic system, especially in challenging times. Go ahead, Philip. That's all.
Oh, are we're talking Lily Cheng now?
Oh, wait, sorry. One
Oh, you
more
have one
thing.
more?
So Osman Malik replied to Amber Morley. And she said, our city relies on preserving the peace and de-escalation as priorities, especially during protests, marches, and large gatherings, and treating all people with respect and dignity. I support Councillor Amber Morley's work to bring this to the Toronto Police S Services Board. Go ahead.
Okay, now before I read her statement, I don't know if you, I mean, I could read the whole thing, and I'll read the whole thing.
Yeah, I think you should.
But what I'll say is a lot of people who saw the initial six counselors who signed it, a lot of the people who are kind of, I want to say in the same boat as me, very kind of like anti-police, kind of, ACAB side of things. I think a lot of us saw Lily Chang sign that and we're like, whoa, Lily Chang? Because, here's what a lot of people have to understand. Our municipal councillors, because they don't necessarily subscribe to the party politics, it's not quite so easy to.
Going.
No, I gotcha. It's not quite so easy to place a label on, on where they sit on the political aisle, the left and the right. And I realize it is mostly an oversimplification when we do refer to politicians as being left or right, but Lily Chang is not a leftist politician, and I don't say that as an insult. I mean that as a statement of fact. Her biggest political mission so far has been to block the assistive housing, not the assist, you know what I'm trying to say, the housing at
Are
in
you
her ward.
sure? Because if we're gonna say that Giorgio Mammoliti is right wing, you remember the video that we played?
Oh, yeah. But again, well, and again, we remember that I said even back then that Lily Chang, it was weird that Lily Chang pushed back against Mammoliti there because she doesn't support that building. Anyways, so the main thing is, and not to mention, you can oppose people who are on the same political side as you. But again, I'm not even sure. I don't know if Lily Chang is, I want to say, on the right or more centrist. I'm just saying, denying the supportive housing that was going up in her ward, that's, I don't think you can call yourself progressive and push for something like that. But anyways, the whole thing was everyone seeing her name on the six counselors, you know, people kind of assume this stuff from Ozma, from Alejandro. I want to say half on Gord Perks for signing on this. I think maybe some people are surprised that, for example, Josh Matlau didn't sign it. I'm not as surprised. I kind of understand where he's at. But okay, so Lily Chang signed the statement that basically said, hey, police, do your jobs, but follow the charter as you do your job, which, you know, offended a lot of people. And Lily Chang responded, it starts with my revised statement on protests in our city. And I got to tell you, I don't think you need a revised statement. I think you can say what you mean once. And anyways, I'll read your statement now. Yesterday, my team and I spent the day helping hundreds of constituents with their vacant home tax bills. Amidst the chaos in our office, we were asked to support a letter taking a certain position regarding a recent interaction between protesters and police on March 30th. Signing the letter in its final form was a mistake. Holy shit. Sorry, that's my commentary. She didn't add that into the letter. The letter was edited multiple times, and unfortunately, we did not have the opportunity to review the final version. We did not endorse the final version. I'm coming back to my commentary to say, you allowed your name to be on something that you didn't read. Like, wow. how callous and like embarrassing, how not serious are you? That's you know, again, I'm gonna keep reading the statement. I'm
but,
gonna continue.
But hold
that's
on,
my,
but
my biggest
can I,
thing.
Can I before you continue, I'm gonna pose a question to you. Now, she fucked up. There's no way around that.
Oh yeah.
But does she get points for telling the truth?
Well, here's my issue with that. Actually, that's a great question, Matthew, and here's my problem with it. What is the truth? Does she support the initial, and I say this because it, you know, when you put something out that says in opposition, does she not support the letter that sent out as it was sent out? Or was she confronted by angry constituents who are demanding that she retract?
That's a good point.
And so, and to be honest, gotta, you know, not devalue the word honest, but I think in this situation, you honestly can't tell. So I find it less honest because you can't tell which are her true feelings. All right. So sorry, I will continue. Additionally, I've been working beyond my capacity in recovery from surgery. Okay, you know what? I actually feel bad to include that part. I mean,
why did she feel necessary to include
she
that?
She shouldn't.
Though?
You know what? To be honest, she shouldn't have. I think if you were worried about, you know, being too overburdened by your job after surgery, I'm not saying that you can't have those feelings, but maybe don't throw your name on a letter that you have the potential to retract. You know, after
unless basically what she's saying, you know, I fucked up. I shouldn't have done that. I'm all fucked up because I'm recovering from surgery.
And
I'm
listen,
sorry.
If the image is that she's just like, she's high on Valium or whatever it is that like she's had to take post-surgery, I'd be like, all right, Lily Chang, you're the funniest counselor now. And so I'm okay with this, but I don't think that's what happened. I do get the sense that this is a very, I want to say, politically opportunist letter. At the same time, I haven't even finished reading the statement.
Sorry,
but to be
continue.
Clear, before I even get to continue reading the letter, I just want people to understand that one of the reasons why there's no reason for her to kind of correct the record here is that all the people who, I want to say, are viewing the statement from the counselors as somehow anti-Semitic, anti-Jew, instead of course, or anti-police even, instead of just saying, hey, police, maybe don't trample on protesters' rights. The kind of people who are mad about that letter don't give a shit that Lily Chang said, actually, no, I don't endorse that. No. Because you still have like these opinion pieces by Warren Kinsella and Brian Lilly and Toronto Sun saying, the far left counselors, Lily Chang and Amber Morley, need to be kicked off the police board because
Thank
they
you.
were tepidly criticizing. Sorry, I know, yeah, I'm sure we'll jump to that. Sorry, but it's stupid. Don't give in to those people because they will not respect the nuance of your position. Does she believe in protesters' rights, or does she believe that the police can do whatever they want? I don't know. It doesn't matter. The people who want to view your actions in the worst light possible already assume you're, a far left hoping to see the city
No,
disintegrate into nothing or whatever their
before you continue,
imagination
I'll
is.
just say one thing. You know, it kind of sounds like Lily Chang's fight to for re-election has already begun.
Well, I think it's begun for all of them, to be clear. And I think she will be on the backstep when it comes to an election.
Her and Bradford. Okay, continue. I had to get that one in there.
Okay. Upon further reflection and dialogue with community members, I would like to issue my statement that differs from my colleagues. In recent days, many residents have shared their concerns with our office regarding their experiences during a march in downtown Toronto on March 30th, 2024. I think we all share the values of the right to freedom of expression and peaceful assembly. Freedom of peaceful assembly is a protected right in the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. In these difficult times of heightened tension in the world and Toronto, these rights must be protected as part of our democratic society. It is deeply concerning to hear residents voicing fears about their freedom to engage in protests, demonstrations, and large gatherings. Perfect statement, Lily Chang. Statement over. I don't even know why you added a put out a statement because that's what all your colleagues said. Sorry, I'm joking. There's more. I am concerned with the temperature of our city. All federal and provincial laws and city bylaws must be followed. I support police responses that hold people to account when the law is broken. At the same time, we should examine why peaceful protesters do not feel they are safe to protest. I look forward to fulsome dialogue about this matter with the Toronto Police Services Board. I also acknowledge the difficulty of policing in a highly charged environment where our officers are always outnumbered. I reiterate my commitment to upholding the rights and freedoms of all Torontonians. I also met yesterday with representatives from Canadian Women Against Anti-Semitism to support a future gathering they are planning to support students facing anti-Semitism in schools across the GTA. Our city must be a place where all people are free to demonstrate and engage in peaceful and lawful protest as a form of democratic expression.
Whoa! Pump the fucking brakes.
Yeah,
See, this goes back to our conversation. I believe it was last week. A general, universal definition on the word anti-Semitic, because holding a pro-Palestinian, what's the word I'm looking for? A pro-Palestinian
protest.
protest is by definition anti-Semitic? No, is it? I don't know.
Matthew, I agree with what you're saying, and in fact, I don't have enough information to kind of make I want to say my understanding is that the Canadian Women Against Anti-Semitism are one of those groups that sort of say that everything falls under the umbrella of anti-Semitism. So I think you're right in that that's silly. That's just not true. But I don't know enough about that group to kind of demonize them. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no. You know what? Honestly, this is so not a municipal issue because it's not even happening in Toronto. Obviously, it's happening in Israel and Palestine. It's so not a municipal issue. Where the fuck is Justin Trudeau? Where is the RCMP? Why does this all fall on the Toronto police? Yeah, it's in Toronto. I get it. But we also have RCMP. Where the fuck is the OPP? I mean, this is not a municipal issue.
Yeah, I
Anyway,
mean,
sorry.
that's
Con
yeah. No, I get what you're
continue with the
saying.
letter.
So, almost done. As we contemplate the very complex and difficult conflict in Gaza, may we choose compassion to be our compass. Let us acknowledge the pain and fear of both our Palestinian and Jewish neighbors. We will not solve the conflict in the Middle East here in Toronto, but we can try to support our neighbors through this difficult time. Here's the thing. There's ultimately not that much to contend with this statement, except that she felt the need to separate herself from the other counselors, who have all effectively said the same thing without the addendum of, you know, these are scary anti-Semitic times. It's not that anti-Semitism isn't on the rise, like, for real, but it's the narrative that talks about a rise in anti-Semitism. There's a rise in Islamophobia. There's a rise in just bigotry in general. And it's all concerning when we focus on one, especially in the way of our current, I want to say our, I'll say how she's defining it, in our, you know, heated environment. You know, all these things are getting worse, but a lot of the people who kind of can focus on only one of those things really downplays the fact that it's happening all across the board. The bigotry is just getting louder and worse.
Absolutely. And so we'll, are you done the letter?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll go to a tweet from your political grandfather, Gil Penalosa. He responded to Paula Fletcher's tweet, and he writes, "Does this mean that only 6 of 25 counselors support the right to protest? How about the mayor and other 19? Does it make sense to come out with 6 when it'd be supported by most, if not all? This is not a right or left issue. Why is it so hard to understand by so-called left?" And he's got that in quotations, question mark. Your response?
Well, once again, is Gil Penalosa implying that Lily Chang is on the left? Because I gotta say, that's like, I do feel like that is, it's a strange, it's a strange description of her. Again, and I base that purely on her actions as a city councilor up till now. Not particularly progressive. I think I might be focusing on the, I'm focusing entirely on the wrong. This is, Lily Chang being on the left or right is not the main focus here.
There is another tweet I want to read. It's by someone calling themselves East End Community Toronto. They replied to the same tweet and they say, "Peaceful protesting is fine, but yelling for the death and destruction of Jews/Israel is not, as are burning flags, swastika signage, and hate speech." And they have, they tagged at Marilyn Fried, is it Marilyn Friedman? At Kevin Vong and at Pasternak TO.
Okay, well, I mean, Kevin Vong's getting thrown in because he's the
MP for that area, right?
Oh, is that a local thing? Then that's probably what that is for. Wait, no, because I think he's in the ward with Ozma Malik.
Oh, okay.
As the counselor. So I think those are just the I want to say the people who are. I think I can put it like this, and it's not like offensive. I would say Kevin Vaughn's support of Israel is uncritical, and I just mean that regardless of what they do, it's, you know, you have to support them. That's the moral, the no questions moral position. I am making fun of the man because.
Okay, so I want to get this in before we go to break. So my city councilor, Ward 1 councilor Vincent Crisanti, responded, but his response is on Instagram. I don't think he Twitters a lot or tweets or whatever it is, or X's a lot. he writes, "Our Toronto Police Service members deserve to be recognized and commended for their professionalism in effectively managing hundreds of protests over the last 6 months, while maintaining public safety across the city. I strongly support individuals' rights to express their views within confines of the law. However, when protesters cross the line and violate the law, it becomes imperative that the police intervene to protect the safety and well-being of all Torontonians. The financial toll of these protests exceeded $12 million to date to ensure public safety. This underscores the importance of maintaining order and ensuring our officers have the resources available to effectively manage public protests. I stand in full support of the commendable efforts of our Toronto Police Service. Every day, our service members put themselves on the front lines to serve and protect. Mayor Chow should call out the councillors who participated in this communication and not stay silent. Your response before we go to break.
As my counselor. You might guess what I'm going to say, but I think that's total horseshit. You know, Mayor Chow has spent the last almost a year, you know, being our mayor, being accused of being this, you know, commie pinko leftist who will just, you know, let whatever leftist policy run wild. While she's given the police everything they've asked for, they came out, they shook the city down with a completely deplorable campaign about how if we don't give them the last $12.7 million, you know, the city is going to descend into chaos. And all the people who most strongly support the police hate when they're not busting the heads of these pro-Palestinian protesters. So it's like, why do we need to have the city only? The thing, I think I talked about this on the show, but like about a month ago, there's a Winnipeg police board meeting where they had a woman ask the police about how since they got their police budget increase, 9 people from Winnipeg were killed by the police, and they shut down the meeting because they thought that that question was, you know, not of decorum. What is the purpose of having individuals on a police board? And this is just kind of like an overarching question. Is the point of having city councilors on a police board to hear what the police want and then to just respond, yes, absolutely, we will give that to you 110%. Oh, something happened? The police are in the right. Absolutely no questions asked. Like, is the point of a police board to be yes men to the police? And that's what I keep saying. And I just would like an answer from the people who think that this is something that is worth Olivia Chow condemning the 6 councilors who wrote it and for the removal of Amber Morley and Lily Chang from the police board for signing it. I don't think the point of the police board is to simply say, the police have done nothing wrong ever in my life, ever. That's stupid.
I can't think of a better way to go ahead and take our break. So we'll be back we'll be back shortly. You guys will see us on the other side. And we're back and continuing our discussion. There is an article I'm just going to briefly read. It's from the Toronto Star by David. I think it's David Ryder. He writes, Mayor Chow has no plans to condemn some city councillors for supporting Torontonians' rights to protest following a pro-Palestinian demonstration that included clashes with the police officers. Whether they are councillors, a deputy mayor, or ordinary citizens, they have the right under the Charter of Freedoms to assemble to have their voice heard, Chow told reporters Monday, responding to a question about police officers' union demand that she criticize the councillors' actions. And she's quoted as saying, I'm not into condemning anyone. I believe it's important if people want to express themselves publicly to do so in a respectful, peaceful, and lawful manner. So the councillors are expressing their opinions, which they have every right to do. Your thoughts?
You know, Matthew, I'm going to admit something very shameful for you.
What's that?
I was just reading my counselor's newsletter. So I sort of missed what you were saying. And the only reason I was reading his newsletter, well, first of all, I respect and like my friend and counselor, Parthi Candavel. So, of course, anything he said of that, I'm going to read. And second of all, his last communication included a bit about illegal cannabis. And I got to say, that's like an issue I give like zero amounts of shits about. Taxation coming from selling cannabis illegally. I don't think that's a huge deal.
Okay, so then let's move on. I have an article from the Toronto Sun, Sunday, April 7th. Just trying to find it. It's an article by Warren Kinsella. The headline reads, "Can't Take Sides. Counselors Must Quit Police Board." Jump in if you want to add anything. He writes, "Politicians can't direct police. They can't direct prosecutors. But can they do indirectly what they can't do directly? They shouldn't. And in the case of two politicians who are members of the Toronto Police Services Board, they can, and they did. In recent days, Toronto police have been attacked physically by the pro-Hamas mobs. Even though cops in Canada's largest city have shown extreme restraint, sometimes to the point that some of us have been highly critical of them, they still have been attacked by those who hate the Jewish state." You remember when the cops were bringing the guy's coffee or the group's coffee? Video evidence shows they've been speared with signs, they've been physically assaulted, and they even had horse feces thrown at them, to your point earlier. Some of those crimes have resulted in arrests. Some are still subject to active investigations. Blah, 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 blah. Blah, blah, blah. But two far left members of the board, I guess that's what we're calling them, two far left, Amber Morley and Lily Chang, have seemingly done that. On Thursday night, Morley and Chang issued an extraordinary statement along with four other leftist counselors. So this is talking about the paper that I read in the beginning of this episode. Basically, I guess this is an opinion piece by Warren Kinsella, basically saying they should be resigning from the police board. Your thoughts?
Well, that was exactly, in fact, he's probably exactly who I'm talking about when I'm saying, you know, A, first of all, the laughable comment that Lily Chang is, you know, far left in any capacity, not the most important part of what he's saying, but it's literally because the police aren't cracking skulls of, you know, the protesters that he personally finds offensive. You'll notice he didn't refer to them as, you know, pro-Palestinian, he referred to them as pro-Hamas.
Yes,
and that's just and that's fundamentally just not what's happening. And they present it that way because then any police action sounds and looks justifiable to him. And once again, I ask the question, what does he think? What does Warren Kinsella believe the purpose of having counselors on the police board is? And is it to simply say, you know, please say jump, and they respond, how high? Like, what is the purpose of police accountability? Again, his big criticism of the police post, you know, being on, actually, I can't say for sure that Warren Kinsella was one of the ones who was loudly joining the calls of police for their $12.7 million of funding. I can't accuse Warren Kinsella of that because I don't know that. Like, I know that's a Brian Lilly thing, you know, Kevin Vuong, Anthony Fieri, you know, those guys. But,
okay, but
I don't...
I'm sorry, I'm just going to jump in. I apologize. No, I'm sorry. But I think he's specifically singling out Amber Morley and Lily Chang because they sit on the police board.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's insane.
Really? Because a lot of people... Like, let's go back to Rob Ford. A lot of people thought for a while that, you know, Rob Ford was, I don't want to say controlling the police, because Bill Blair, or was it Bill? I don't remember.
It was Bill Blair, I think, back then.
Came out hard against him. Mm. But I mean, John Tory has had him and Mark Saunders, whatever his name is, are friends. one could make an argument that he had some control over the police even though you're not supposed to. It says politicians are not supposed to. They're supposed to be, what's that word I'm looking for? Objective.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, and so fundamentally, what I would like to know is the role of, and I'm gonna leave it as an open-ended question. I know that everyone who's listening to this understands what my answer is. But if in some weird alternate universe where I got to ask Warren Kinsella the question, I say this as if I don't harass him on Twitter fairly regularly. I do. I'm not going to lie. I am pretty honestly abrasive towards him. But I would like to have him tell me what is the purpose of the police board in the first place? What is the purpose?
Because they get whatever they want anyway.
Exactly. You know, and even when it comes to, for example, the police budget, as we've talked about in the past, the city can say no, and the police has their own avenue to essentially force the city to give them that money.
Well, we'll get there because I have something to say about
that. Okay, all right, cool.
But I have one more article. It's by your boy.
Is it Brian Lilly?
It's Brian Lilly.
God.
Toronto Sun, Wednesday, April 10th, 2024. And the headline reads, "Whose side are they on? ? 6 councillors support pro-Hamas groups that rejoice in October 7th terror. Mayor Olivia Chow says she won't condemn
quick pause. But yep. it's just once again about the framing
of the opinion, yes.
They have to put it under an opinion because they can't put it under a column. You know, or else their publication could get fucking sued. Of course they have to put it under an opinion. And it's just, the fact is, how many of those people truly, honestly, do they believe are there celebrating the actions of Hamas, you know, so dancing excited about what happened on October 7th? Or there are people there witnessing the devastating destruction of Gaza and the deaths of Palestinians, scores of Palestinians, and it's offensive to me to have them just be like, oh yeah, no, they don't care about people. They're pro Hamas.
Okay. So I'm not conservative. However,
I know. No, I hear you. I know.
However, from the conservative side, let me throw this to you. It's probably a horrible example, but it's the only one that I can think of. You remember when Josh Matlow was penalized for holding city council accountable publicly?
Yep.
Well, these are police are paid for by the city. They're city employees. These councilors are holding them, trying to hold them accountable. Mm-hmm. So how come they can't suffer the same fate as Josh Matlow? Your thoughts?
You know what? I would say that's a good counterpoint. The problem is that I thought it was stupid for Josh Matlow to be punished for anyways, you know, for what he was
doing. I agree.
Yeah, yeah. So it's hard to throw this out here because it's like, I think that action was stupid. So of course I wouldn't agree with them, you know, kind of putting out a punitive, I want to say, a punishment for them for making the statement. But I am surprised, now that you've said it, that people like Warren and Lily aren't calling for those kind of sanctions.
Absolutely. Okay, so the article reads, Mayor Olivia Chow says she won't condemn 6 councillors who criticized the Toronto police's handling of a recent pro-Hamas rally. Again, that language, pro-Hamas, you're right.
Well, and then again, immediately, and this is, I know, please finish the article, but how can you not just offhand reject the premise of the article entirely? Because they're fundamentally painting a picture of who these protesters are, which is untrue.
Here's the issue that I have with this article. It blurs the lines because it's an opinion piece. You have to keep that in your mind. But then the stuff that's written in here, the intention is to blur the line. I understand that. It's to blur the line between fact and fiction. Let me go on because I want to get this recorded. I want you to hear this and I want to hear what you have to say. Neither will the six counselors who sign the letter answer questions put to them by the Toronto Sun. So they're not answering any questions. They're not doing any media. Detailing the links between the groups organizing the protests and support for terrorism. For months, we've seen these marches and rallies take off across the city. Mostly, they've been described in the media as pro-Palestinian. That's under quotations. But as my colleagues and I at The Sun have been noting, there is something more sinister at play here. In politics, as in life, you're judged by the company that you keep, and every counselor that signed that letter should be judged for the company that they're keeping. Freedom of peaceful assembly and freedom of expression are protected by the charter, and rightly so. But that doesn't stop us from being able to judge who is assembling and who is cheering them on. On Monday, I wrote to Deputy Mayor Ozma Malik and Councillor Gord Perks, Alejandro Bravo, Paula Fletcher, Amber Morley, and Lily Chang, and presented them with information about Sammy Dune, I think that's how you say it, and the Palestinian Youth Movement, two of the main organizers for the rallies. In addition to presenting the six counselors with details of the ties between the groups and the banned terrorist groups in Canada, I asked them for comment. None of them replied. Okay.
Oh, sorry. Were you waiting for me to?
No. Something popped because, up on the.
Oh, because I screen. Go ahead. Do have a singular comment, which is, you know, again, if I were city councilor, God willing, you know, that's the dream, that's the hope. I also would refuse to respond to Brian Lilly. So I mean, I don't know what you want from them here, Mr. Brian. They don't have to respect you.
Sammy Dune is a group that shows up at protests across Toronto with a large banner reading "Long Live the Resistance." The banner features an image of an AK-47 rifle firing bullets, with the butt of the rifle painted as the Palestinian flag. That's hardly a call for peace. The group's Canadian-based international coordinator, Charlotte Cates, states explicitly that she supports Palestinian armed resistance in all forms and encourages everyone else to do the same. Sammy Dune has direct ties visible on their website to the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, a group listed as a terrorist entity by the Government of Canada since 2003. Earlier this year, Sammy Dune hosted an event with Hamas official Dr. Bassem Naim, someone who has spread incredible amounts of disinformation about the West or in the West about Hamas activities, according to the Washington Post. The Palestinian Youth Movement has spent years promoting the members of Hamas, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, and other terrorist groups as heroes. Immediately after the October 7 attack by Hamas, the PYM, which is the Popular Palestinian Youth Movement, began organizing rallies in support of the resistance, including here in Toronto. So basically, what he's implying, or what he's outright saying, is that some or all of these counselors that signed the letter that we're still talking about have ties or indirectly have ties to these groups. I'm not saying that. I'm just reading what Brian Lilly said. Your thoughts?
I'm going to start with an asterisk, which is my addendum of I don't know. I don't know anything about these groups. I don't know what their goals are. I don't know what they've been organizing for. But, based on Brian Lilly's characterization of the protests at the jump, you know, again, they are pro-Hamas, which, as I've just discussed, is absolutely not true, is functionally lying to demonize these protesters. So how can I trust his characterization of these other groups? Again, keep in mind, asterisk, question mark, I am ignorant. And I'm okay with saying that out loud. I don't know what their deal is. I don't know what those groups' deals are.
It's not a
I'm
municipal
not.
issue.
Oh, I don't care if it is or not.
Oh.
I'm not gonna take my calls, my information from Brian Lilly. It's, you can extrapolate who is reliable and who is unreliable based on how they present their positions. And again, he's referring to every single protester who is concerned about the lives of Palestinians, every single one of them, as pro-Hamas. So I don't know what these groups are doing, but I wouldn't take Brian's word.
As for calling for, I mean, he basically stopped short of calling for, I don't know about the resignation for all six, but absolutely the resignation of Amber Morley and Lily Chang. Your
From the
thoughts on
police
that?
board.
Well, I
I mean,
think
again,
maybe, no, I
oh, is
think,
it like a hard line they should just go?
to be honest with you, I stopped reading the article. Maybe
You
it's
know
a,
what? And I'm not gonna judge you for that.
but if I mean, okay, let's start with the police board. If you, I mean, I think here's the problem. Why would you want to be a part of a board of something that you're opposed to, that you don't support? That'd be like, Philip, you know we all love you, but you wouldn't do well on the police board because you don't support the police. Am I right?
Yes, but and so okay, I'm a mix. I'm mixed on my position here because initially I thought it was great that Olivia Chow wasn't on the police board. It's like, it's an institution that perhaps you don't respect, which is again, I say that and a lot of people will hear me say that and be like, oh, so Olivia Chow does hate the police. It's like no, I think I'm fantasizing about an idea of Olivia Chow hating the police. Once again, she gave them everything they wanted. Won't ever denounce any of their actions. Kick a guy in the subway in the head 5 times. No condemnation from any counselor, from the mayor, for that man. But so initially, yeah, my thought was, yeah, good for you, Olivia Chow. Don't be on the police board if that's not your thing. But again, and it comes back to you could tell how much it really impacted me, the Winnipeg Police Board meeting video that I brought up earlier in the episode, the one where it's you have this woman who's speaking to the police board. She's got a very kind of like timid voice when she's saying, since the Winnipeg police budget was passed, the Winnipeg police have killed 9 people. And, immediately the police board just shuts that down. They're like, that question doesn't go with decorum. Thank you for your time. So that to me, that sounds like a police board that's filled with yes men. There's not a single person on that board to stop and say, hold on, I want to hear what this woman has to say, because we have to figure this out. Like we can't just brush this aside. But that has been the stance of if you are for the police, if you're pro-police, you support them whether they do everything right, or even when they make a mistake, and it's like, well, that's just the way that it is. And so when you say that I would not do well on a police board, you're probably right. I would probably spend every board meeting, having a conniption every single time because fuck the police. But at the same time, they need somebody on the board to say, what are you guys doing?
They need to be held accountable, which is not the same thing as tearing them down. It's two different
That's fair.
things.
Okay, all right, fair enough. Yeah. All right, you know what? I'll accept this criticism of me because I'll be honest. I'm sure, listen, I would do my best to be properly critical, but I'm sure a lot of it would just veer into, some very solid ACAB, fuck the police kind of rhetoric.
So let's move away from this story, but not entirely away from the police. Last week, or was it the week before, we were reviewing a council meeting. I don't think it was last week. I think it was the week, the time before that.
I think so,
February 6th meeting, where the girl, it was when the jobbers were on and they couldn't figure out the answer. And then the one other person came on and said, there are 540 officers. Go back and listen, because it's there. I didn't want to sit through a 9-hour meeting to find the fucking 3 or 10 second clip, or else I would have it for you guys to listen right now and I would have plugged it in right here. But again, it's a 10 second clip inside a 9-hour video. So we've been corrected by Phil. Let me know. We were corrected by Diana Chan McNally.
Yes.
So apparently the Toronto Police Service has approximately 7,600 full-time and part-time uniformed and civilian officers, including frontline police officers, criminal investigators, community response officers, parking enforcement officers, communications operators, court officers, civilian specialists, and support staff. Okay, so let's take away the support staff and the civilian specialists, those parking enforcement guys, the court officers, the whole telecommunications 911 branch. We'll take that all away. Even the community response officers, that's not the same thing. I want the number of frontline police officers plus criminal investigators. I want those two numbers. I don't believe they're anywhere near. So we're at 7,600. So what's a fair number? I mean, I'm guessing at this point, because nobody wants to give us the numbers.
The number Deanna McNally posted was 5,100. And that was a correction, because I had made a tweet. They were saying that there's like 150 police officers who are currently being paid by the city who are suspended, which, of course, by the way, is its own disgusting little thing. But when I thought the number was like 540, that's a percentage of close to like 25%. So you gotta wonder where I am, where I see, you know, where in my mind the number is 540 police officers, which, you know, we maybe should have thought more critically about it, but that's not important. They said that number in a council meeting. That's not our fault. That is not our fault. So I hear the number that's like 150 are suspended, and it's like, holy shit, that's like 25% of the force. How is this not a huge scandal? Now, at 5,100 officers, that's 2.3% of officers having some kind of, you know, issue big enough that they get suspended, which is still a bad number. Let's be honest. 2%, 2.8% of all police officers getting suspended for poor activity. I know it sounds like a small number, is a huge percentage.
Well, now it's even more evident when you have to spend $12 million for 6 months of protests. It's for to allocate overtime to all the officers, practically every officer, to take part in.
And I know, you know, I wanted to craft a message for you to send, mostly to find out about the breakdown of the police officers' numbers. But also, I would love to know how to calculate that, the $12 million for the protests. You know what I mean?
Well, I will say, because Philip and I here tell the truth, we apologize if we hurt feelings, but we're not going to get in the way. We're not going to get, you know, people's feelings in the way of telling the truth. You know, I've been in contact with, I can't remember his name. One second. Let's look that up, Phil.
We'll get there.
What's his name? Deputy Chief Rob Johnson. I was texting him on Twitter. I reached out to him, let him know that we'd be interested in interviewing him. We have a lot of police related questions that someone with his years of expertise can answer. Because other than that, I mean, Philip and I were here. It's mostly speculation, because nobody's talking. Nobody's giving us the answers. It's like they're afraid of the truth. And, you know, I know you don't like that the Pickering counselor that we talked about a couple weeks ago, or 3 weeks, whenever it was, when I stopped reading her article. But she said, I go back to that movie, The Firm,
and Jack Nicholson's iconic line, "You can't handle the truth." But Tom Cruise, his line was equally as iconic, and he says, "I want the truth." So he reached out and he said, "Send me a link so I can see what this is all about." Obviously, he doesn't want to get caught in something that maybe, you know, like a gotcha moment or something. We don't got any of that. I will be nice to him. I'll ask him questions and I'll form my own opinion from there. I mean, even Phil promised to be nice to him.
I'm anti the role of police, but I'm not going to take a police officer and be like, "Hey man, you're going to answer my questions? Go fuck yourself."
So we'll leave that there and hopefully he'll come on the show shortly. Another thing we have looked forward to, and this is something actually that I haven't had a chance to tell you yet, Phil. There is a podcast called Cross Border Interviews that we're going to be doing some stuff with hopefully in the future. I don't know if it's a one-time thing or multiple thing. We'll see. We'll see what happens. They do a lot of interviews with politicians from all over Canada, mostly municipal. And from what I've seen, a lot of it takes place in the prairies. A lot of it. They've even interviewed the guy running for NDP in Alberta.
Nenshi,
when he was the mayor of Calgary.
Hell yeah.
So they go a little back. They go far back. I think they've got over 500 episodes on Spotify. So look them up. Cross Border Interviews with a guy named Chris Brown. Okay, moving on. We have a letter from Francis Nunziata. I'm just scrolling to it. It's about the vacant home tax. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but she put it out on Instagram, so I want to read it. It's dated April 4th, 2024. For immediate release, Toronto City Councillor Nunziata calls for reversal of unfair vacant home tax charges. "I am deeply disappointed with the City of Toronto's lackluster efforts in notifying homeowners about the mandatory annual vacant home tax declarations. The recent imposition of a vacant home tax equivalent to 10% of a home's assessed value," and in brackets it says MPAC value, "for failure to declare occupancy has left many residents in distress. The city's outreach efforts failed to effectively reach vulnerable populations such as seniors and those with limited English proficiency, resulting in undue financial burdens and emotional distress among affected homeowners. With the commencement of tax bill mailouts on April 2nd, my office has been inundated with pleas for assistance from distressed residents facing unexpected tax liabilities. I condemn the imposition of a $21.24 late declaration charge considering the circumstances. Given the unprecedented economic challenges facing Toronto residents, compounded by soaring costs of living, it is unjust to burden homeowners with additional financial penalties for failure in communication on the part of the city. Furthermore, I emphasize the urgent need for the City of Toronto to improve its notification processes to ensure that all homeowners, regardless of age, language proficiency, or technological access, are adequately informed of their obligations. And until such time, I will fight to have the late charge reversed, as it's an unfair burden on residents. I strongly oppose this charge and will move a motion at City Council, if necessary, to have all late charges removed from the homeowners' tax bills. I urge the city's administrations to prioritize the welfare of its citizens by promptly addressing these concerns and implementing measures to prevent similar oversights in the future. Francis Nunziata." Your thoughts?
You know, I think I might surprise you here. All right. Which is, I feel like normally very anti-capital. I feel like if you have a home, you can afford. I mean, and to be honest, I still am on that track. You know, I do feel like if you have the capital to afford a home and to allow it to be empty, it's, you know what? It's not the vacant tax itself I have an issue with. In fact, the issue they're pointing out, which is this, I want to say, inadequate notice. As you know, Matthew, as you've visited me at my place of work, I'm a concierge as a residential building. And I had a unit owner who, so I knew her when she lived in the building, and then she moved out and she rented her unit out, and you know, it's all cool. Her tenants are cool and I know her, and it's all great or whatever. So she owed the city $4,000 because she didn't get the mail that said that she had to pay this vacant tax. The mail went to her unit's mailbox, which is, you know, at the condo. So her tenants got that mail. And then, and this is, you know, you could say, like, well, at that point, they should have informed the unit owner. It's like, oh, yeah, we got this mail from the city. You should come get it. I'm sure they did. But it's like, how often do you just get so much junk in those mailboxes that you sort of just brush it off and ignore it? So I don't know how you can improve that system, but I do know that people who are well-intentioned, again, this is me saying to you out loud, it wasn't someone with an empty unit. It was someone who had their unit rented out to tenants, and she just didn't declare it because she didn't know. And so I do, again, not, I don't feel, I gotta add this little addendum. I don't feel too sorry for her because she had the capability to pay $4,000, and then the city reimbursed her when there was a mistake. And I did make the joke when she told me about this. I was like, oh, you know, that's great. That's just free money. That's girl math. I don't know if you know the concept of girl math, where if you, and listen, it's not a strict definition, but you know, she paid $4,000. So at that point, that's money spent. It's gone. And then as far as she's concerned, the money that came back from the city, that's just free money. That's just $4,000. You can do whatever you want with. So, you know, we had a little laugh about the girl math there. So, so the fact is, I don't know what would be better in terms of informing unit owners of their obligations, but I have actually seen this play out in that, you know, someone who's not taking advantage, you know, they're renting out their unit to tenants. It's not an Airbnb. It's just a proper residential unit. So she wouldn't have been dinged by the vacant home tax because it wasn't a vacant home. She just didn't know what her obligations are. And I feel like with a brand new program, it's hard for me to want to blame the homeowners who aren't quite so politically involved.
Switching topics. Before we go to break, I just want to get, it's a hot take, so I want to get your opinion on it. So this was a post by the National Post on Twitter, by a guy named William Watson. And he says, with Ottawa doing everything, who needs provinces anymore? And this was quote tweeted by former municipal guest Chloe Brown. And she says, hot take, cut the number of MPPs. Mayors should take on the dual role of representing their cities at provincial parliaments and their local city hall. Your thoughts?
You know, I had seen that tweet, and I think it's an interesting idea. I don't think there's any situation where we should have less representation. I don't think there's anything wrong with simply having the mayors of the cities also participate at Queen's Park. I think Chloe's right. I don't necessarily think that we need to have less representation. And again, I assume in her mind, it's simply you would remove one of the MPPs that was in the municipality and just replace that with the mayor. And I get that. That makes sense.
But here's the thing. I apologize. I'm always cutting you off. I'm sorry.
No, it's all good.
Wouldn't then the mayors have to be part of one of the parties?
Oh, you know what? What? Fuck. That isn't. That's a good question. That is a. You know what? Because in my mind, I'm thinking, no, not necessarily. As an entity in Queen's Park, they could act as independents, but then as independents, they don't really have any power.
Right?
So, shit. You know what? I actually think that might be enough for me to say, oh no, Chloe, I think this might actually be a bad idea. I think it's a well-intentioned idea. I wonder if there's just a problem with, you know, I'm sure if we had Chloe on and we were talking to her, I'm sure she would actually be able to convince me about why it's actually brilliant. Because of course she's, you know, she knows what she's talking about.
And I also saw this real quick because we're running out of time. I also saw this tweet. I don't have it. I didn't save it, where they're again talking about Toronto being its own, I don't know if it's a province, to
Like the
basically
charter city thing.
abolish the provinces, and you have the federal government giving money to each city instead of the province.
Yeah, that's here's the thing. It that feels like we right now it feels like that would be a good idea, but that's only because we have obstructionist premiers going right now. If we, you know, say we do that, say we destroy the provinces and we just have one centralized government, all of a sudden we have a government, we elect a government that doesn't give a shit about funding cities and taking care of us. And then, oh no, we want our provincial premiers back. That's a genie that we don't want to uncork out of that bottle, you know? That's we don't want that.
And with that, we will see you guys on the other side. And we're back. And for the main event, I thought we would turn our attention to the TTC.
Ooh, I like the TTC.
So there's two things. One is funny, and I know that we're already done celebrating April Fool's Day. And a couple of the news items, remember, they got me. So this is my response. I thought it was funny. It's photoshopped. It's not real. No money was actually wasted on this. But the headline reads in Now Magazine, "It's not funny. TTC responds to fake ad going viral online, telling riders it's not their problem if they can't pay." So you know how the buses have the advertisement on the outside of the bus? It goes, "Can't afford to pay? Figure it out. Not our problem. Fair is fair." I thought that was funny. Your thoughts? I don't know if this was an April Fool's thing because of the time of year or whatever, but.
So it wasn't an April Fool's thing. Although I will say, I don't know who's the source of it, but it is very funny. And good for them. I don't know. Sometimes you need the good old fashioned satire slash parody to really kind of get you to see, oh yeah, I guess there are problems with the system. It's innocent enough. I think it's fine. It's funny.
Alrighty, so then we will go to this just fell in my lap, but apparently there's a board probe into TTC CEO Rick Leary. You know, the
Ooh.
man who made the most money last year.
Yeah, and the guy who we all sort of agree is just kind of getting in the way of any sort of improvement with the system.
So this was published on April 11th, and the headline reads, "Documents shed light on probe into TTC CEO Rick Leary." Stop me if you want to comment. "The workplace investigation into TTC CEO Rick Leary that has dragged on for more than 5 months includes allegations he violated employees' human rights and tried to land jobs for his friends, among other claims," the Star has learned. "The TTC board has not shared any information about this investigation, which it called for at an October closed door meeting, and which two sources told the Star is expected to cost around $250,000, leaving the public, board members, TTC employees, and Leary himself in the dark about its progress." So this investigation is costing 250,000. We'll just take it out of
what you guys paid him. I mean, that's fair is fair, right?
That, yeah, that, yeah, fair is right.
But according to documents shared with the Star, the investigation is being conducted by Ottawa-based dispute resolution firm Neutral Solutions and was launched following allegations made through the TTC's integrity portal, which allows employees to file complaints without giving their name. Okay, so it says here, it appears to be focused on allegations that Leary violated employees' human rights generally and specifically with regards to women, hired his friends. I'm trying to get through this. And undermined TTC policies and interfered with investigations, according to documents which were produced as part of the probe. The allegations have not been proven, and the Star doesn't know whether the investigators have reached a judgment about them. Neutral Solutions did not return a request for comment. In an email this week, Leary said that since the special board meeting, no one has contacted him to interview him or to relay any specifics related to the board's decision. He said that as a result, it was impossible for him to respond to the Star's questions about the allegations or to consider them informed by anything more than rumor or an innuendo. Let me see here. In the meantime, I remain focused on my job as CEO of this amazing organization, a position that is both an honor and a source of great personal and professional pride, he wrote. One board member said that the probe, which was launched by TTC chair Jamal Myers, has been handled poorly from the start. As the Star previously reported, Myers tried to suspend Leary at the October meeting until the investigation was finished, but he was outvoted when other members weren't convinced of the severity of the allegations warranted the CEO's removal. That left Leary in the unusual position of reporting to a chair that had tried to put him on leave. That was the board meeting that we covered a while back where they failed to get rid of Rick Leary.
Yeah. And we all thought, you know what? I kind of feel like we owe Jamal Myers a bit of an apology, because I think we were under the impression that he was stumping for Rick Leary, but it sounds like he's the man who's on the pulse. You and I, we've been saying, it's like, why is Rick Leary still here? Well, why is Jamal Myers keeping him on?
It's the way, if I remember correctly, it's the way that the article that we read, I'd have to go back and listen to our episode, the way that it was worded made it sound like, well, no, Rick Leary technically hasn't done anything wrong, but all of the people that donated to our campaign hate him, so it's our job to get rid of him. That's the way it was insinuated. It wasn't that, oh, he did anything wrong and there's an investigation against him. That's a horse of a different color, to borrow a line from the movies.
The movies, all of them.
No, that's from The Wizard of Oz. Come on, you don't remember?
No, I know. It was just how you framed that. I thought it was funny.
So you're right, actually. You know, going back to what we were talking about earlier, even if it's an opinion piece, the way you word it, especially if you have clout, and I'm sorry, I know you don't agree with me, but Brian Lilly does have clout.
Listen, I don't like the man. Yeah, he has clout. Here's the thing. Just because I don't like someone doesn't mean I don't see the reality of, like, where they're at.
Right.
So, like, yeah, Brian Lilly has clout, and I think that's what makes it worse.
Right. Okay, so it continues. The investigation was launched without a lot of thought being put into it, and here, and these are quotes, and here we are now a months later, and we're still all left in the dark, and the source who spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss confidential matters. They said the board has not been updated on the investigation since the October meeting and has been given no timeline for its conclusion. What the fuck are we doing here? You're paying this third party firm, Neutral Solutions or whatever the fuck they're called, to do an investigation. You haven't gotten an update since October, November, December, January, February, March, April, six months later. 6 months, not a fucking word.
Yeah, it really got to make you wonder, what are they actually doing? What are they investigating? Who are they talking to?
Well, the board member said that they have confidence that TTC employees and management would continue to do their jobs despite uncertainty surrounding the CEO. Some relationships at the agency may be strained, that's in quotes, as long as the investigation is unresolved. I do hope this wraps up soon, so at least Rick Leary and his team can move on. Myers declined to answer questions about the investigation or his handling of Leary's case, citing confidentiality requirements. But in a statement, he said that he and the board are dedicated to continuing to work alongside the TTC to provide safe and reliable transit that keeps the city moving. According to provincial guidelines, it is reasonable to expect employers to conduct workplace investigations within 90 days, Philip. That we're double that.
Yeah, oh yeah.
However, experts say each case is different and probes can take longer depending on factors like complexity and availability of witnesses. I'm sorry. Don't the fucking witnesses work at the TTC? I mean, that's what we're talking about. I don't even want to read the rest of this article. I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed in the city. I'm disappointed in Rick Leary. I'm disappointed in Jamal Myers. It's one thing to try and rectify the problem, and then it becomes public, and then you're quiet for so long. You know, when we become counselors, because I firmly believe it's a matter of time, I understand that we're not going to be allowed to talk about everything. There are some confidential spaces. However, 6 months.
Yeah. What's happening? What's the background here?
What's the name of that famous cop? He had a TV show. It's a fictional cop. What's his name? Columbo. This wouldn't take Columbo 6 months.
No, well, it would take
him
Columbo
60
minutes. Yeah, he'd
no, the whole episode. Whole episode.
He just chilled back and he's like, "All right, well, nice to meet you, Mr. Leary. I'm glad we had this talk. Oh, by the way." And that'd be it. Columbo would be done. The investigation's over.
You know, I think I've said this before. I think, you know, we can end with this. I've said it before. I'll say it again. I'm fully supportive if the city were to decide to fire every single CEO that the city employs. There shouldn't be a CEO because the counselor in charge of it should be the CEO.
No, you know what? I agree with that.
There should be a COO. When the city councilor is not there to run it, and to make sure everything runs smoothly and this meets the city targets, there should be bonuses in place, but that's only to make sure the city reaches their targets.
Yeah, yeah, no, I agree.
Because, I mean, we're gonna cover this next week. I'm gonna put it on the docket for next time we sit down. We're gonna go in depth on the Sunshine List. And I'm telling you, like, how many CEOs do we have? They're all on the list, obviously.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. I mean, I don't even want to get started on how many cops are on the list. But
we'll get there.
It's just ridiculous the amount of waste the city spends. And they're broke. And then they're like, "We're broke. We need handouts. Where's the province?" Mr. Ford, where's
Mr. Ford, Mr. Trudeau, please, money now. Money me, money now. That's from my Always Sunny heads.
But before we go, you know, usually I'm highly critical of everything, but I do want to give a shout out, and it's weird because one day I'm probably going to take his job, but I want to give a shout out to my Ward 1 counselor, Vincent Crescenti. He and I don't see eye to eye, but you know, I think he's had a pretty good week. We'll see if that continues, but like we said from the beginning, when we see good stuff, we'll call it out. It's more fun to call out the
bad absolutely stuff, yeah but... when things go bad, it's so much more fun to be like, what were they thinking, versus when someone's doing a good job and you're like, okay, thank you, good for you, thank you. Like, that's not fun.
So before we get off here, though, I would like to report that I have not seen a tweet worth reading from Lisa McLeod.
Oh, good, because she's awful.
One last point. I want to hit this. We didn't do anything federal last time. Just one point, because I just thought of it now. Your thoughts on Jagmeet Singh saying that he doesn't want to, I can't remember the exact words he used. He's not going to support the carbon pricing, or is it?
It's so here's my understanding. Well, okay. I do have some thoughts on this, because like, what a joke the federal NDP has become under Jagmeet Singh. And again, I personally like Jagmeet. I think it would be so fun to hang out with the guy. But the direction of the federal NDP as a workers' rights party, as a kind of leftist idea party, is just, it's not happening. I think I've pushed back on this. I'm sure you've said it before, and I think I've pushed back on the idea. But he truly is right now making the federal NDP the Liberals' shadow. And that's not what I want the federal NDP to be.
Certainly not going to help him come election time.
No, God, no. It's like he's leading his party to electoral destruction in an environment where, with the Liberals dropping popularity, the people who should be supplanting that, you know, jumping in that space, should be the NDP. And they can't get it together.
They can't get out of their own way. They can't stop stepping on their own dick.
Yes, absolutely. So one thing that I had said was Pierre Poilievre, he had sort of set up this idea of having a televised meeting between the premiers and the prime minister about the carbon tax. I think that's a silly waste of time. I think that's just, you know, theatrics for the sake of theatrics. Like, that's not how we govern. What I said specifically in my tweet about this was, this isn't the Real Housewives of governing Canada. Although I will say, I would love for This Hour Has 22 Minutes to make a comedy sketch where they've got like the headshot moments with Doug Ford. What does the prime minister want from me? I tell him the carbon tax costs too much, and I don't have a Doug Ford
voice.
I gotta tell you.
Did you say that shit's gonna be televised?
Well, that's the intention. That is what Pierre put up. And I think that was stupid and silly. And then Jagmeet, and I thought to myself, the way that a lot of this stuff is presented by conservative partisans on Twitter and conservative MPs like Andrew Scheer, is Pierre Poilievre puts up a thing, an idea, a thought. In this case, the televised meeting. And they present, and other conservative partisans present it as, oh, is the NDP going to do the moral thing and say no to Justin Trudeau? Or are they just going to suck him off and keep his party going? And it's like, my opposition to that is, just because the conservatives say it doesn't make it the moral position. Bro, and then Jagmeet voted for it. So I'm like, what is your problem?
Bro, I'm telling you, if this actually goes through and we have a televised town hall kind of situation with all the premiers and the fucking taking turns, taking shots at Trudeau. Oh. That will be the highest rated television program. It will surpass the NHL playoffs.
But it won't.
It will surpass the NBA playoffs, the Major League playoff, everything, fucking everything.
You're so not wrong.
The greatest thing of all time.
Listen, you're so not wrong. The problem is that's not governance. That's not fucking governance.
No, but a little entertainment. Hey, that wouldn't hurt anybody.
That's fair. That's fair.
And I think that's where we'll end today. Phil and I want to thank everyone for listening. Thank you for the renewed interest in our YouTube. We're getting our YouTube clips out. And we're going to be having more guests on, like we stated previously. We have emails to read, but we'll save that for next week. And then basically that's it, Phil. I think we did a good one here. We want to thank all our fans all over the world. I know we have listeners listening everywhere, from literally everywhere. I'm not going to do the list because it's so long. But anyway.
Where's our Kazakhstan boys at?
We thank everybody that listens to us, especially everyone that does not in Canada. Like, awesome. This is how fucked up our municipal government is.
Guys, just enjoy our hell, our personal hell. Just enjoy it.
We'd love to hear stories. If you guys want to email the municipalspod@yahoo.com and let us know how fucked up your municipal government is. We'll read it right on the air.
I'd love to know about your rural municipalities. I think that'd be fun.
It's some of the stuff. I know specifically in the States, the government is so overlapped. It's not funny. It's crazy how overlapped it is. But anyway, that's going to do it for us. So for Phil, thank you guys again. And we'll see you next time with brand new content.
And welcome to another jam-packed edition of The Municipals.
Rising taxes are probably a reality.
I'm a big advocate of change. Not change for change's sake. Change when something isn't working.
I'm sure the NDP wishes that they had a less embarrassing federal partner to work with right now.
Don't vote, can't bitch.
The moment we go to an election is the end of Prime Minister Justin Trudeau.